Hello and welcome to Choice and Control, a podcast celebrating the contribution that people with disabilities make to our communities. In this series, we are talking all things disability, social inclusion, and the National Disability Insurance Scheme. Throughout this series, you will also be hearing some great practical advice for making the most of your NDIS plan from local people accessing the scheme. This podcast series is brought to you by the team at Carers Queensland, NDIS Local Area Coordination Partner in the Community. I'm your host, Douglas Connor. Thank you for tuning in. Today we have a very special episode for you. We're lucky enough to be hearing from two incredible women who, with their families, have made Australia their homes in recent years. Both women now reside on the Gold Coast and have family members with a disability receiving supports through the National Disability Insurance Scheme. First, we're hearing from Sonee. Sonee came to Australia with her husband Trulko almost 6 years ago after leaving her home country of Tibet to visit the Dalai Lama in India. The Dalai Lama is the spiritual leader of Tibetan Buddhism and has been in exile in India since 1959 following a failed anti-Chinese uprising. Many Tibetans see the Dalai Lama as a living god, and Sonee and Trulko wish to visit him in India to pay their respects. Unfortunately, on their attempt to return to Tibet after their visit, they were not re-allowed entry. Tibet has been a place of political unrest for centuries, and in recent times, Chinese authorities in Tibet have enforced penalties for those who choose to visit the Dalai Lama.
My name is Sonee Lamo, and I'm from Tibet. China, they control the Tibet. So His Holiness Dalai Lama, he lives in India, so he can't go back to Tibet. So that's why we want to see him. That's why we went to India. Dalai Lama, he's our God or present. So that's why really we just want to see. So when I went to India, I meet the Dalai Lama, and after that, I tried to go back to Tibet. But the China said, no, you can't come. I went to Nepal, and I tried to get visa, and I went to New Delhi, tried to get the China, said, no, you can't.
For Sonee's husband, Trulko, it was his second time visiting the Dalai Lama, with his first trip resulting in a year's jail time.
First, before marriage, he went to India, meet the Dalai Lama, and he come back in Tibet. So then China, no, he went to India, and then China put him to jail 1 year. After 1 year, he sent it back home, but they said, China police come every day and check him and like this. Then he come back again.
Unable to return to Tibet, Sonee and Trulko returned to India before eventually settling in Australia. Sonee and her family have now been in Australia for almost 6 years, and she says that being away from family is the hardest thing to adapt to. Unaware that her absence from Tibet would be a permanent one, the couple did not have a chance to say a proper goodbye to their loved ones. Sonee says that she regularly attempts to contact her family by phone, but worries about getting them in trouble with authorities.
We don't understand what we do. And I didn't meet all my family when I went to India because I just think I go to India, meet Dalai Lama and come back home. So this way I just went. I didn't meet all my family, my sister and brothers. So it was very sad and it's so difficult. But even I can't talk to my family. Because China, they control Tibet. So last time, my family, they bought phone and then I spoke and I used WeChat. So China come to my house in Tibet. They say, you can't use WeChat and you can't talk out of the Tibet people. You can't talk. And they took my mom's phone and my mom, they took China's 1 week. They keep the 1 week. After they send the mom back, but they keep my mom's phone, they said, you can't talk anymore. Trulko, his mom is 85 years old. Yeah, she always say, when you come in, when you come back. Yeah, always. When he talk mom, he always say, when you come back.
Sonee's husband, Trulko, has a physical disability and receives support through the NDIS. Sonee says that having access to NDIS support has made a huge difference to the life of the family.
They help lots of things. Not just only Trulko, you know, it means they help all family. Trulko, they take Trulko somewhere and lots of things, yeah. Now it's better. Like NDI, they support me and I know some people, NDI, they support lots of things, yeah.
Next up, we'll be hearing from Fatima, an Australian-born woman of Turkish descent. Fatima is the mother of 10-year-old Merchan. Fatima had been living in Turkey for close to 10 years when concerns over Merchan's health and a changing political environment forced them to relocate back to Australia.
Merchan, he's 10 and a half, I should say. He was born in Turkey. He was born healthy, just like a normal child. But when he was 2 and a half, he was just so hyperactive. He would literally climb straight walls. His development skills were really good. To his age, he was age appropriate. And then he had an accident, took some aspirins. And I was fortunate there was an ambulance on site of our complex for another emergency, but they took him and he was in ICU for, 72 hours? And then after he was discharged, you know, about close to a week, I realised he was not able to use the words he was using, like 2-3 words at that age appropriate. He was using a lot of body language and making up little words of his own. And I knew there was something not normal there. People wouldn't understand. They thought I was overreacting as a mother. And I took my son to the doctors and they also thought I was overreacting and everything. But when he was in hospital, the hospital doctor said there might be a bit of oxygen lacking at the time to the brain, but then they didn't take it on further. Investigations wasn't done. And then I said to my, when he was four, so what, 1 year and a half later, I can see his development was really, very behind. And that's when I decided to come back to Australia. Well, one of the reasons why I came back to Australia, because I knew I would be able to find and get the support that he needed.
Apart from ensuring that Merchan received the best support available to him, the other factor in the family's return to Australia was the changing political situation in Turkey. Fatima says that Turkish society was seeing a shift back to outdated traditional values that her family didn't agree with.
Also, another thing was the regime that's currently there. I wouldn't have been heard anyway, even if I had the money and everything. It's a very different outlook. It would have been a very different, I wouldn't have got the support anyway. It was a total opposite, like 360 degrees opposite to our values and ethics as a family, but not only as a family, I'm Australian born, but descent Turkish. Yeah. And obviously I have been brought up in a Turkish tradition and cultural families. My parents were educated. My father was a very broad-minded, like my father would help around in the house, you know, duties, house, you know, vacuum or wash or whatever. And his friend would say, oh, what are you doing? You know, that's a woman's, well, my wife's working too. So she's contributing to the house. I have to, you know, help her. So this is the way we have been brought up. So has my husband, his family.
Fatima said that opposition to the ruling party's politics actually saw her husband lose his business.
It's either his way or you're in prison. And my husband lost his business because he wasn't part of the regime. He went bankrupt. That's why I'm back here.
Once back in Sydney, Fatima began the search for a diagnosis and support for her son Merchan.
So I came out here and then my husband came, followed on afterwards, a year or so after. I found a really good neuropsychologist back in Sydney who did a cognitive test and many other tests as well, and was diagnosed with hyperoxic brain injury. And that's when I started to get some assistance in Sydney when we moved up to Gold Coast about 4 years ago. And I took it on again. And then the school was very helpful and then got on to the services with NDIS. He's receiving OT, psychology, speech, occupational therapy, but it's basically on his cognitivity and so forth. As a family, our goal is to actually get him to be able to communicate, to able to address his fears, to also to be able to be to identify a few things like, you know, what's right and wrong, like bullying and rudeness and mannerism. So we've come quite far, you know, to the positive. We have achieved. Just we're sort of trying to get onto the academic side now to comprehend, and we're doing that at home as a family.
Now living on the Gold Coast, Fatima says that Merchan is thriving at his new school and working towards achieving his goals.
He is. He's at Broadbeach Public School. He loves it. And I love that school too. One, I think it's one of the best schools on the coast with its support networks and the facilities that they have. He's getting the real good support there because of NDIS as well. They know about his situation. So he gets that extra support at school as well. So he has speech and language therapy there. He has a psychologist there, a counsellor. He also has a one-on-one teacher for his English and maths to help him with the questions when he's not understanding. So they're in class, but he's just focusing on Merchan. It's done quite a lot, yeah.
Fatima said that the support offered by the NDIS had far exceeded her expectations.
Absolutely fantastic, because I have my own issues too, Douglas. Mm-hmm. So it becomes overwhelming. So when something is happening, I can easily get in touch with Merchan's caseworkers and so forth and say, look, I need some of this support and I can't do it because of my... And they're straight away doing it for me, getting it done for me, which that's why I'm very, very happy with the service. I think it's the best thing ever. They've acknowledged children with some disabilities that they need extra support. It's not that they're silly or whatever. They need a little extra support.
Fatima also mentioned that she noticed quite a difference in the way that people with disabilities were perceived in Turkey and in Australia.
And I was actually teaching English at a private school in Turkey, and I had two students. They were behind in their own peers. But when I used to go to them and teach them and show them things one-on-one, they were actually, that's it, they can do it. They just couldn't get that group thing. So I actually brought that up with the school counsellor at the time over there. And I said to her, look, you know, we have these kind of supports in Australia. I know that. Is there any support here in Turkey? So, I mean, I wasn't educated in Turkey, obviously, so I don't know the whole system. And she just laughed at me and she said, this is Turkey. You remember that, don't you, Fatima? I said, yes, I do. But that doesn't mean that we're still living in 1960s or 50s. So they don't recognise it. And then when you start talking to the family, it's very hard for them to accept that there is something wrong, because the community, it's what the community thinks. It's not what you think about your family. So it's very different.
Fatima says that now, after a couple of years, her son Merchan and her husband are both starting to adapt well to Australian life.
Well, Merchan, at first it was quite hard because, you know, he did miss his room, his things, his belongings. You know, he has an older brother back there. He does sort of vaguely remembers him. But he didn't, you know, as a child, 4 years old, quickly sort of overcame that. But my husband, he still has difficulties. I mean, he was 60 when he came out to Australia. So it was very hard, but he's starting to understand and getting realizing it.
Fatima says that access to NDIS support made the transition to Australia a much smoother process for her family. The family are now together, loving life on the Gold Coast. There are some differences, however, with Fatima lamenting the lack of access to cheap European travel.
Over a weekend, just a weekend getaway, I used to go to Greece. I used to go to, you know, neighbouring countries, and it was like, I remember it was, what, 40 euros return ticket, 40 euro. 40 Amazing. Euro. I can't even get here to Coffs Harbour. Forget about Sydney or Melbourne.
That's all for today, and a big thank you to Sony and Fatima for sharing their stories. The National Disability Insurance Agency and Carers Queensland are committed to delivering the National Disability Insurance Scheme in a way that is sustainable and responsive to the needs of our richly diverse and multicultural nation. Australia is a nation of peoples with many languages, ethnic backgrounds, traditions and religions, where more than a quarter of Australians were born overseas. More than 300 different languages are spoken by people from called backgrounds, in addition to the hundreds of languages spoken by our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Australians identify with around 300 different ancestries. I hope these stories provided some insight into some of the different ways that the NDIS is helping to support culturally and linguistically diverse people with disability in Australia. Thank you once again for tuning in to Choice and Control, a Carers Queensland podcast. For more information about Carers Queensland, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, or the Local Area Coordination Program, please connect with us online at carerscqueensland.com.au, or you can catch up with us on Facebook at facebook.com/carersqueenslandNDIS. We hope this podcast can become a place for people with disability to share their experiences and their stories. So if you have a story that you think we should know about, please contact us via the Carers Queensland Inquiries line at 1300 999 636 or via email at cq.inquiries@ndis.gov.au. Until next time, thanks for listening.